When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Before we start the show, just a reminder to share, like, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it. And please, give us a 5-star rating. It helps us beat the big tech algorithm. Also, if you love Red Pilled America, please consider becoming a Backstage subscriber. You'll have exclusive access to our entire back catalog of episodes and our behind-the-scenes podcast. Just visit redpilledamerica.com and click support in the top menu for details. And don't forget to get merch from the RPA store. RPA merch is always made in America and never stuck on a cargo ship. Visit redpilledamerica.com and click shop in the top menu. Support what you love or it goes away. Thanks, everyone.
Almost without fail, whenever they get a chance, Hollywood likes to sucker punch half of America. Whether it be a TV series, film, or award shows, Movie City constantly rams its hate for Middle America down our throats.
Well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still... Isn't it past your jail time?
Nowadays, if you are racist, you're probably a Republican.
It's no longer down with Trump, it's Trump.
I feel like Clarence Thomas. I'm like harassing you right now.
Nearly 100% of content coming out of Tinseltown takes a cheap shot at half the country, and Middle America is tired of it. What will it take to break this woke monopoly of Hollywood? I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We're all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You can think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth. Welcome to Red Pilled America.
How do we break the woke monopoly of Hollywood? To find the answer, we tell the story of Rotten Tomatoes, the film and TV review site that inadvertently exposed the silent gatekeepers of Movie City. Along the way, we hear from Christian Toto, the purveyor of HollywoodandToto.com, and a film critic that has analyzed the anti-American bias of Tinseltown for decades. It may seem like the woke mob has a stranglehold on the storytelling industry, the very institution that defines and drives American culture. But there is a way to loosen its grip. If the forces that want to end wokeness have the will and foresight to commit to the plan.
Not long ago, two campaigns faced off in a race for American votes.
Maybe he's not as rich as he says he is.
You need tremendous stamina.
The battle couldn't have been more lopsided. It was the juggernaut against the buffoon. The juggernaut was hands down the overwhelming favorite. Its campaign had an enormous funding advantage, a whopping three times more than the buffoon. On the issues, the juggernaut campaign had an orthodox Democrat approach. It portrayed Hispanics as victims and whites as their oppressors. It pushed amnesty and universal health care.
I thought this campaign finally gave us an opportunity to achieve universal health care.
And promoted the idea that anyone that preferred a border barrier was deplorable, even evil.
We will not build a wall.
The juggernaut was no doubt the establishment media's favorite. The underdog challenger, on the other hand, was thought to be a bona fide laughingstock, with an approach that appeared almost designed to turn off conservatives. Its campaign thrived on crude language, jokes, and insults.
She suffers from a thing called loser's remorse. She lost.
And even included a wife with a penchant for posing nude, traits that grossly undercut the pro-family message of Republicans. On the issues, the challenger took a diametrically different approach than the juggernaut.
But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
The buffoon highlighted the problem of drug trafficking at our porous southern border.
And we have to build a wall. For people, for gangs, for drugs. The drugs has never been a problem like we have right now.
But perhaps most notably, the media hated the challenger with a passion. At the time the two campaigns launched, the pundit class gave the juggernaut a 66% favorable rating. The raunchy underdog received a paltry 29% favorability. So, when early voting kicked off, you wouldn't have been alone in thinking that the buffoon was going to lose in a historic landslide. But as the votes started rolling in, the two campaigns were inexplicably neck and neck. Then something surprising happened. Conservatives put the crass and lewd behavior aside and began rallying around the underdog. Through the glass-shattering shrieks of the elite pundits, the buffoon found an audience in middle America. In the end, when all the American votes were tallied, to the astonishment of anyone paying attention, the underfunded, lampooned, buffoonish challenger defeated the juggernaut.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business. Complicated.
The critics couldn't have been more wrong. Of course, you may have assumed we've been talking about the 2016 matchup between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and we probably led the witness a bit. But you'd be wrong in that assumption. What we traced was the battle between two 2013 movies launched in the same week. Elysium, starring Matt Damon, and We're the Millers, starring Jennifer Aniston and Jason Sudeikis. And this matchup unexpectedly highlighted a media bias problem that is not only plaguing political journalism, but Hollywood media as well. Simply put, film critics are to the left of the mainstream media, and they have effectively constructed a barrier that blocks overtly middle America films and TV shows from ever being made.
The 2013 box office battle between the blockbuster-budgeted sci-fi movie Elysium and the lowbrow slapstick comedy We're the Millers bears a striking resemblance to the 2016 presidential race. The values Elysium espoused could have been pulled directly from the Hillary Clinton campaign. Elysium was a dystopian film where the privileged lived behind a barrier on a luxurious space station with access to technology that could cure any ailment. But that tech was being kept from the poor Hispanics by the white elites. Just like Hillary Clinton, the movie was pro-amnesty, pro-universal health care, and anti-border barriers.
All illegals are now in custody, ma'am.
Yes. Send them to deportation. Get them off this habitat.
And with the then budget of over $115 million, also like the former First Lady, Elysium had near unlimited access to funding. Likewise, Were the Millers carried many of the traits of the Donald Trump campaign. The comedy was a story of a bunch of buffoonish characters that came together to form a makeshift family to defeat a Mexican drug cartel.
Well, you have a lovely family.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, this is my son, Kenny Miller, right here. And my lovely daughter,
Casey.
Casey Miller, that's right. And I'm David Miller. We're the Millers.
Like Donald Trump, it was crass, crude, and funny.
Yeah, and I got my hands full here. A couple of kooky teenagers.
Yeah, I'm going through all those typical teenage girl issues, like finals and college applications, and am I going to get asked to prom? Plus, I haven't gotten my period in like 2 months, which is really weird because I've mostly just been doing a...
It inadvertently pushed the strength of the family and the perils of a broken border.
You bringing anything back into the United States, sir?
Yeah.
Sir, are you bringing any contraband back into the United States?
And with a production budget of less than a third of Elysium, it was no doubt the scrappy underdog. Like the mainstream media with both Hillary and the Donald, Hollywood critics loved Elysium and hated We're the Millers. The conservative media saw Jennifer Aniston's film, with its pro-family undertones, as a stealth right-wing movie, and it got behind the comedy. By the time the domestic box office was done, U.S. moviegoers voted, in the form of ticket sales, against the recommendation of the Hollywood media. We're the Millers made roughly 47% more than Elysium in U.S. domestic ticket sales. America chose the buffoon over the juggernaut, just like they did in 2016 with Donald Trump. The 2016 election and the 2013 box office battle revealed a glaring liberal media bias. In both cases, the expert journalists were at odds with the public voter. But where conservative politicians regularly squeak out a win within their biased media ecosystem, conservative-themed films not only have a hard time racking up a W, they even have a difficult time coming into existence.
At the time We're the Millers launched, we were good friends with the producer of the film. He was and is a devout liberal. He was shocked that conservative audiences liked his movie and hadn't intended on making a right-wing friendly film. And that would come as no surprise to insiders in Hollywood. They all know it's near impossible to make an overtly conservative film. And that's because the Hollywood media would suffocate that right-wing baby in the crib. Through our research of Rotten Tomatoes, an aggregator of film reviews, what red-pilled America has learned is that the film media has a greater liberal bias than political media, and it's not even close. Like every product, films live and die on promotion. What capitalist would ever put money into a product that has no reliable promotional vehicle? By doing a deep dive into Rotten Tomatoes, we discovered a secret Tinseltown gatekeeper, a system that, in effect, blocks overtly pro-American films and TV shows from ever being made. This matters because the storytelling industry defines American culture. Storytelling establishes America's values and what's good and evil. It makes narratives into reality. If you've ever wondered how the sexualization of children made it into the mainstream, or how the victim-oppressor narrative has become so prevalent, or why so many believe cops kill unarmed blacks even while the data proves the opposite. If you ever wondered how all of these messages have made it into the mainstream, look no further than the storytelling industry of Hollywood that has been pumping that false poison into the American bloodstream for decades. What Rotten Tomatoes shows is that the film industry media is effectively a woke gatekeeper of Hollywood. A gate that overtly pro-American films rarely get past. To understand how this rigged system was established, we first must go way back to the rise of the duo that would eventually put Rotten Tomatoes on the map and would ultimately become the prototype of the Hollywood film critic.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Life is short. It's important to surround yourself with people you love. Do the things that make you feel happy, and if you're me, eat delicious licorice. I've got the latter covered thanks to fresh and delicious licorice from the Licorice Guy. If you're an avid listener of RPA, then you know that licorice is my jam, and that it does not get any better than the gourmet licorice made by the Licorice Guy. They have a great selection of flavors to choose from, like red, blue raspberry, black, and green apple, just to name a few. The freshness of their licorice is unlike anything you've ever tasted in licorice before. If you haven't tried the Licorice Guy yet, then you're living a life unfulfilled. Trust me, you will not regret it. What I also love about the Licorice Guy is that it's an American family-owned business. We're big proponents of buying American and supporting American workers. Right now, Red Pilled America listeners get 15% off when you enter RPA15 at checkout. Visit licoriceguy.com and enter RPA15 at checkout. That's licoriceguy.com.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. Roger Ebert was born in 1942 in the Illinois city of Urbana.
My dad was an electrician at the University of Illinois. My mother was a bookkeeper with a small loan office in downtown Urbana.
Roger had a great admiration for his father, a fact that would no doubt inform his later politics.
He was a working man, a Democrat, blue-collar, a union member, also kind of an intellectual. He read a lot. He was very interested in current events. We were always watching the talk shows on Sunday morning and listening to the commentators on the radio.
As a young boy, Roger fell in love with the art of movie making.
I started going to the movies as a kid in Champaign-Urbana. I went to the Prince's Theater on Main Street. My Aunt Martha would take me to the movies over in the big palaces in Champaign. And then in high school, I started going to the Art Theater, which showed movies like Citizen Kane, movies by Fellini, Bergman, The Angry Young Men from Britain, Cassavetes, and the other American independents.
Now, in the late 1950s, filmmaking was not an art form that a kid could just start doing, but writing was.
I wanted to be a newspaper man almost from the beginning. My best friend who lived across the street, Hal Holmes, his father was a city editor of the News Gazette and took us on a tour of the office. And they gave me my byline set in a piece of lead, you know, so you could use a stamp pad, say, by Roger Ebert. And I thought, boy, that's for me. I want to be a newspaper reporter. So I wrote for the grade school paper. I produced a neighborhood newspaper. And, of course, I worked for the News Gazette starting as a junior in high school.
His parents were supportive of his writing.
They allowed me to stay out all night, two nights a week, to work for the News Gazette. I had to have a special work permit and some kind of a pass because of the curfew. And they supported that because they could tell that I wanted to be a writer, and that was fine with them.
Roger would go on to study journalism at the University of Illinois and got involved in the College Film Society. He would eventually enter the doctorate program at the University of Chicago, but then an opportunity came along that made him change course.
I had done some writing for the Chicago newspapers. I did book reviews and feature pieces for the Saturday entertainment section of the Chicago Daily News, and I applied to the Daily News for a job. And my letter wound up at the Sun-Times, and Jim Hoag, who was then the managing editor, or perhaps the city editor, called me in and hired me.
Roger dropped out of the PhD program.
And so I went to work at the paper in the fall of 66, and on April the 1st of 67, I became the film critic. My predecessor retired. The feature editor gave me the job. So I lucked out into my entire career. I mean, people say, how do you get to be a movie critic? I guess my answer would be, I have no idea. With me, it was good luck. Right place, right time.
Roger Ebert would become a prolific film critic at the Chicago Sun-Times. He wrote entertaining articles intended to make sophisticated cinematic stories accessible to a broader audience. Roger would often recommend foreign and independent films that he believed would be appreciated by normal folks. As a result, Roger Ebert would win the Pulitzer Prize for Criticism in 1975. It was a huge moment, not only for Roger, but for the profession of film criticism. The arena was finally taken as a serious endeavor. Before Roger Ebert, the profession was plagued with poor pay and hostility from the studios. At one point in the mid-1940s, MGM famously sued a film critic for what they perceived as unfair negative reviews of their film. The film industry largely looked at the film critic with disdain. But with Roger Ebert's Pulitzer win, the profession was elevated to a new, respectable plateau. It was around the time of his award that Roger was encouraged to team up with his crosstown rival.
We were asked, Gene Siskel and I, to do a movie review show. And I think we were both kind of hesitant because we had a rivalry. He was at the Tribune, I was at the Sun-Times. And we didn't have a real warm relationship.
Even with their competitive relationship, the two respected one another.
Gene was very smart. He also had very high standards. He didn't compromise easily.
So in 1975, the two decided to give the movie review show a shot. It launched on PBS's Chicago affiliate.
The point of our show is to sort of be a news magazine about movies, and we wanted to show you what's playing in town, what's coming to town, and also maybe take you behind the scenes and show you a little bit about the movie business.
At first, the two were a bit stiff. It would often take them around 8 hours to record one 30-minute episode, but it wasn't long before they began to understand the medium of television. They rebranded the show Sneak Previews, and they began to toy around with the rating system.
Both Gene and I like it, and that's why it says yes next to both of our names. We recommend you see this movie.
Roger would later reflect on the show's success.
I think we respected each other, and we both knew what we were talking about. The important thing about that show is that it's not about gossip. It's not about who's in rehab, who's getting divorced, what did they wear to the premiere. It's about movies.
They made film criticism cool and fun, even though I don't think they were technically cool and hip.
That's Christian Toto, a film critic and purveyor of HollywoodandToto.com, a film enthusiast website where Christian posts his movie reviews and editorials on the film industry.
They were the face of film criticism for quite a while. I think, we know, you could always open your newspaper, old school, in your hand newspaper, and read the reviews. But what they did took it to a different level. They were extremely passionate about films.
Well, you're wrapping yourself in the flag of children, and I'm saying, go see The Black Stallion instead. There's a film with little dialogue.
Hold on. I'm not wrapping myself in the flag of children. You're wrapping yourself in the flag of the sophisticated film
no,
critic
boredom.
Who's seen it all.
No, boredom. Boredom with Benji Running.
I don't think that any child is going to be bored by this movie. And indeed, I found the nature photography to be very interesting myself.
They love to bicker about films. That's probably one of the reasons why I do what I do.
In 1982, they moved from PBS to a commercial television network called WGN. And they rebranded their show again, naming it At the Movies.
This fall, WG entertains you like never before with At the Movies.
Our full-time job is going to the movies.
So join us this fall for At the Movies, the movie review program, Saturday evenings at 6:30 here on WGN TV9.
And it was at WGN that Roger Ebert came up with what would become their iconic catchphrase.
Roger just walked in one day and says, "I got it."
That's a former producer of their show.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, the most famous thumbs in the universe, as far as I'm concerned, was created here at WGN.
I'm giving this movie thumbs up as a comedy. I think you totally missed the point, and I don't know why you missed the point.
When a movie got two thumbs up, film studios would print it bold, right at the top of their movie advertisement.
Another agreement, though, two thumbs up for FX. And an FX is the only double thumber on this show, right?
That's right. The only two thumber upper, if you will.
The gimmick was a hit. It became so popular that they trademarked the phrase two thumbs up. Again, Christian Toto.
The thumbs up, thumbs down was iconic, and they did it in a way that was entertaining.
They became nationally recognized and were invited on the most important shows of the 1980s.
From our Chicago bureau, Gene Siskel.
Please welcome. It's fun to have these gentlemen with us. Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel.
Roger Ebert is film critic with the Chicago Sun-Times, and Gene Siskel is in the same capacity for the Chicago Tribune. Would you welcome Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel?
And they became the face of the critic.
Because of Siskel and Ebert, the film critic became a sought-after job at newspapers. So in the Reagan era of the 1980s, when the mainstream media began to slowly take on a more openly liberal posturing, the film critics at those newspapers naturally fit the same liberal mold.
Chicago film critics Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert judged movies like Roman Emperors Deciding a Gladiator's Fate. A thumbs up or thumbs down could mean success or death at the box office.
A liberal gatekeeping network began to quietly form in every corner and crevice of America. A hint of this liberal leaning could be seen in Siskel and Ebert's review of an up-and-coming filmmaker.
My choice for the number 5 movie of the year was the funniest single movie of the year, in my opinion, a documentary called Roger and Me. This was the movie with a fairy tale story made by a man from Flint, Michigan named Michael Moore, who sold his house and held a weekly bingo game and garage sales to raise money for his hilarious and sometimes really wounding attack on what General Motors had done to his hometown. After a decade in which America has worshipped at the shrine of higher profits and more ruthless business executives, here is the movie a lot of people were waiting for, a raucous, angry, funny, unforgiving counterattack against corporate greed. The amazing thing is that the whole movie is so entertaining. At last, the have-nots get back at the haves.
Which is the tradition of American movies. I mean, the movies were always the little man's way of getting back, knocking off the banker's hat with a snowball, one of the earliest images in any silent film. And this picture knocks off a lot of banker's hats with a fusillade of snowballs.
Progressive activist filmmaker Michael Moore was universally heralded by the film critic community. They made Moore the new Hollywood It Boy. And this new kingmaker power of the critics would come in handy because Hollywood's films began to have a negative impact on American culture, and the industry needed a helping hand to defend against the bipartisan attack on its content. By the 1990s, Hollywood started getting blamed for the sexual depravity and violence that was becoming commonplace in America.
The police coming straight from the underground. A young got it bad because I'm brown.
Gangster rap like N.W.A.'s The Police had become all the rage, and in the wake of its birth, violence erupted in ghetto hotspots like South Central Los Angeles.
The violence erupted after the acquittal of 4 white policemen in the beating trial of black motorist Rodney King. There's been looting, buildings have been set ablaze, and some motorists have been dragged from their cars and beaten.
Hollywood added fuel to the fire with films like Oliver Stone's Natural Born Killers, which depicted a young couple embarking on a violent killing spree.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a redneck by its toe.
The filmmakers claimed the movie was a commentary on the media's glorification of violence. Whether that was true or just deflection, the film undoubtedly raised the bar for gratuitous violence on the big screen. By the time the 1996 election cycle kicked off, Republicans and Democrats alike elbowed each other out of the way to be the first to criticize Hollywood's new low, including the GOP presidential frontrunner, Bob Dole.
One of the greatest threats to American family values is the way our popular culture treats them.
and ridicules him. Our music, movies, television, and advertising regularly push the limits of decency, and they bombard our children with destructive messages of casual violence and even more casual sex. And I concluded that we must hold Hollywood and the entire entertainment industry accountable for putting profit ahead of common decency. Televisions and movie screens and boom boxes and headsets are windows on the world for our children. Tonight, my challenge to the entertainment industry is to accept a calling above and beyond the bottom line, to fulfill a duty to society which provides its profits. Help our nation maintain the innocence of its children. Prove to us that courage and conscience are alive and well in Hollywood.
Almost immediately, Siskel and Ebert came to Hollywood's defense.
What he's trying to do basically is suck up to the far right, and we might as well notice that. The fact is that when Senator Dole attacks rap music, he's using code words. What he's doing basically is he's trying to draw a wedge. He's trying to say those terrible people over there are perverting our Central American values with their bad ideas about violence and about the family. It's just a specious argument. If you want to talk about violence in our society, let's get serious for real. And let's talk about guns. Why is it that guns in the movies are bad, but they're okay in our streets? Can anybody explain that to me? I don't think so.
The mainstream media and Hollywood journalists alike heaped praise on the duo for their defense of Tinseltown. Siskel and Ebert had become the Pied Pipers of the entire film critic community. Where they went, critics followed. And that should have been no surprise. The entire industry had been captured by the left. Like the two thumbs up inventors, the film critic community may not have agreed on what was or wasn't a good film, but they almost all unanimously agreed on their politics. Because once the left took over the mainstream media, they logically populated their newsrooms with like-minded liberals, including the film critic positions. As the late 1990s arrived, Siskel and Ebert may have been at the pinnacle of this amorphous film critic community, but a new development was about to come along to dethrone them, and at the same time, reveal the entrenched bias of the entire Hollywood media.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Do you want to hear Red-Pilled America stories ad-free? Then become a Backstage subscriber. Just log on to redpilledamerica.com and click join in the top menu. Join today and help us save America one story at a time.
Welcome back to Red-Pilled America. As the dot-com boom was reaching its peak in 1998, a designer at a small website design company was about to craft a machine that would eventually take over the entire business of film criticism.
I had a web design firm that I co-founded with my CTO, Stephen Wang.
That's Patrick Lee, one of the founders of Rotten Tomatoes. The creative director of his design company was a guy named Sen Duong. Sen was a huge movie buff who was struck by how studios promoted their films. He noticed that for some odd reason, movie ads were always filled with positive film review quotes, even when the movies were crap. So in 1998, Sen came up with an idea.
He was a huge Jackie Chan fan, and basically when Rush Hour came around, he wanted to know what everyone was saying about it. So Sen's idea was like, what if I take all the quotes from professional critics only, good and bad, and put them in one place? And that's kind of how Rotten Tomatoes was born.
Sen came up with a rating system for his new website, and it looked an awful lot like Siskel and Ebert's Thumbs Up and Thumbs Down, but with a minor phrase change. He called it Fresh and Rotten. It was a throwback to the days when audiences would throw Rotten Tomatoes at bad stage performances. If a critic reviewed a film positively, Sen's system would count that as a fresh tomato. If they didn't like the film, that would register as a rotten tomato. If the film was given 60% or above in positive reviews, it would be deemed fresh. Any movie that garnered less than 60% positive ratings would be considered rotten. What Sen couldn't have known at the time was that his site was revealing the entrenched liberal bias of Hollywood media. Shortly after the birth of the site, Rotten Tomatoes began posting the list of film critics they used for their tomato rating system. And if you dug into that list, it wasn't hard to see that the pool of critics were almost universally liberal. In fact, in 2017, we did a study on the film critics populating Rotten Tomatoes, and the results were eye-opening. We found a massive liberal bias. The liberal media outlets on the site outnumbered conservative outlets by a ratio of 19-1. But when looking at the individual approved film critics, the disparity was even more jarring. Rotten Tomatoes approved liberal film critics outnumbered conservative critics by roughly 33-1. There were definitely film critics with no discernible political position, but the structure of their rating system was clear. Rotten Tomatoes wasn't necessarily trying to create a model that represented the movie-going public. What it had created was a snapshot of the film critic community. Again, Christian Toto.
Rotten Tomatoes is essentially a mirror. It's a mirror that reflects the film world and the film critical world. So some of its flaws are not really its flaws. It's the world's in general and their issues. And you look at sort of ideological diversity. The reason why there are so few critics on there who lean right is because there are so few critics in the world who lean right. So that's not Rotten Tomatoes' fault.
Christian is one of the very few right-of-center film critics on Rotten Tomatoes. And when we say very few, we mean you can practically count them all on one hand. Therefore, if a movie with conservative values entered theaters, it was almost certain that it would get a rotten rating, if it could even get reviewed at all. Seemingly by circumstance, Sen Duong built a grossly biased system that stealthily built on the iconic success of Siskel and Ebert. The site was launched in 1998, Again, Rotten Tomatoes founder Patrick Lee.
We were hosting the site for him for about a year. And during that time, you know, he's putting a lot of time into it on the side. And it was kind of affecting his work. And we were like, oh, we don't know if it makes sense for you to be putting so much time into this.
But then the team got a signal that they were on to something.
Roger Ebert wrote an article for a magazine pointing out his favorite movie sites, and Rotten Tomatoes was one of them.
It was a huge thumbs up for the young website. Ebert was, of course, a king of film criticism. With his recommendation, in a sense, he transferred his credibility to Rotten Tomatoes, and the timing was perfect for the upstart website. Earlier that year, Gene Siskel had been diagnosed with brain cancer, an ailment he'd die from in less than a year from diagnosis. Siskel and Ebert's domination of the film criticism world was coming to an end. In addition to Roger Ebert singing Rotten Tomatoes' praise, the website got mentions on the dominant search engine of the time, Yahoo. Then the team got a clear message that Hollywood was taking notice. One day in November 1998, Rotten Tomatoes got a huge spike in traffic. The team had no idea why, so they tracked the IP address of where the traffic was coming from, and it turned out that it was originating from the animation studio Pixar. The studio had just released the film A Bug's Life, and apparently the workers at the studio were going to Rotten Tomatoes and refreshing their page in mass to get updates on the film's reviews. Hollywood was now using the site.
So we were like, hey, if Pixar's using this, if Roger Ebert's using this, maybe there's something there.
So Patrick Lee moved his company's resources away from its web design business and put a team of 25 on Rotten Tomatoes. Then he went out and raised $1 million to fund the project.
When we raised in January 2000, internet bubble burst 2 months later. The problem when the bubble burst was not only that people couldn't raise money anymore, but most internet sites were reliant on ad revenue. That ad revenue was mostly coming from other internet sites. And so people couldn't make money anymore because these internet sites didn't have the money to buy the ads anymore. So when you cut up all the funding and cut out revenue, these businesses were going out, like closing left and right. And I think we identified about 100 competitors or potential competitors when we first started. Pretty much within a year, I think like 90% of them were out of business. So it was like a pretty tough time. And we actually had to cut from 25 people down to 7 over the course of a year.
For the next few years, the team struggled to stay afloat. Patrick Lee even resorted to sleeping under his desk for 6 months. With everyone in the dot-com business going under, the Rotten Tomatoes team began looking for an exit, someone to purchase the company so that they could make their investors' money back. A company named IGN Entertainment, a video game and entertainment media website, started negotiating to purchase Rotten Tomatoes. However, things started to stall a bit. But as the negotiating dragged out, the Rotten Tomatoes team got a boost from an unlikely character.
This movie's actually getting great reviews.
While interviewing actor Mark Ruffalo, humorist Jon Stewart began plugging the film review site on Comedy Central's The Daily Show.
You ever go on Rotten Tomatoes?
No.
Rotten Tomatoes is like a website that reviews movies before they, I guess before they come out. Or
did we get any?
You got very good reviews. You got full tomatoes, which is good.
Like not rotten ones.
No, if you get a tomato, that means that a certain percentage of people say it's good. I think it's over like 70% say it's good. And if not, you get, I'm not even sure why they do this, an asterisk, which makes no sense in terms of a tomato. So if your movie is bad, there's an asterisk next to it. And if it's good, a delicious tomato.
And we got a delicious tomato.
A delicious tomato. So congratulations.
It was a PR windfall. Roughly 2 months later, IGN acquired Rotten Tomatoes.
I think we ended up selling for 10.
That's $10 million.
Which isn't a huge number, but back then, you know, everything else our investors invested in tech, went to zero. For us to even be around and for them to make some money off of their investment was actually, I think, pretty hard at that time.
Over the next 2 years, films would slowly begin using their tomato rating in their movie advertising. Then another tragedy would work in Rotten Tomatoes' favor.
When did you sense Rotten Tomatoes had really popped?
You know, it was around the time that Ebert really slowed down in his writing.
That's Rotten Tomatoes' former editor-in-chief, Matt Achety. In 2002, Roger Ebert was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. The disease severely impacted his health. By 2006, he left his At the Movie show for good. he'd continue writing, but Roger Ebert would eventually lose his ability to speak. The disease took his life in 2013.
And, you know, there was that first round of illness, and we started seeing that people were quoting our scores in the media.
People in Hollywood.
In Hollywood, in, you know, a lot of movie coverage would get, you know, oh, this movie did this well on the tomato meter, and they would quote the scores.
By 2010, visionary Apple Computer CEO Steve Jobs added Rotten Tomato ratings to its movie purchase and rental service.
And you can see a synopsis of the movie, the actors, director, producers. You also can get user ratings, and you can see the tomato meter up there for the first time. And you can get detail on the actors, what other films they've been in, etc., the director. And you can actually read reviews from Rotten Tomatoes.
Google would eventually add the Rotten Tomatoes rating score for all movie searches on the site. Rotten Tomatoes was the new king of film reviews. And at the time, the film industry was going through a dramatic shift.
In 2002, 1.58 billion domestic movie tickets were sold. It was an all-time high, but that would prove to be a peak. In the years that followed, that number went on a steady decline. By 2017, only 1.24 billion tickets were sold, 340 million less movie tickets. The COVID shutdowns in 2020 led to a staggering decline. That year, roughly 220 million tickets sold, a decrease of 1.3 billion less tickets. By 2023, the number of tickets sold only partially recovered to roughly 825 million, an almost 50% decline from its peak. The lazy response is to blame the trend on streaming technology, but this downward trend predated the popularity of YouTube, smartphones, Apple TV, cheap flat screens, the rise of social media, streamers like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, and the Great Recession of 2008. The decline started before all of those trends kicked off. And even more surprising, this decrease in ticket sales started while both the number of movie screens were increasing and the number of films released each year was on the rise. The U.S. film industry has been spending more money but getting decreasing ticket sales at home. How is this happening? The answer is simple. Woke globalism. Around the same time the domestic ticket sales reached a peak in 2002, the international box office surpassed the domestic box office for the first time and never looked back. By 2023, the domestic box office brought in roughly $9 billion. The foreign box office, by contrast, brought in a whopping $24 billion. So Hollywood no longer cared about pro-American movies. It wanted to appeal to a global community, which was and is far to the left of Middle America. This Hollywood drift towards globalism can also be seen in its moves with Rotten Tomatoes. For years, Hollywood studios had tried to outsmart moviegoers and film critics. Before Rotten Tomatoes became dominant, if a stinker of a film got universally bad ratings, the studio would simply find some nobody of a film critic that liked the film and add their positive review to its advertising. In one case, a studio even created a fake film critic.
Movie review quotes exposed as fake. If you ran out and saw A Knight's Tale and The Animal based on the glowing blurbs of one David Manning of Connecticut's Ridgefield Press, the reviews are fictional and film critic David Manning does not exist. Manning was the creation of Columbia Pictures' marketing department.
But by 2006, the power of Rotten Tomatoes couldn't be denied. So, over the course of the next 10 years, in a series of moves, both Warner Brothers Pictures and NBC Universal took indirect ownership stakes in Rotten Tomatoes. With domestic tickets declining, the two studios didn't attempt to come up with a better system that helped foster movies that appealed to conservatives, and it was clear the audience was there. Passion of the Christ, American Sniper, and even We're the Millers were clearly successful because of conservative audiences. The studios that owned Rotten Tomatoes could have pushed it to implement a system that better represented the American movie-going public, but they did not. Instead, they continued the system that led to a liberal-to-conservative film critic bias of 33-1. And this is important because movies rely on promotion to sell tickets.
It really sucks that reviews matter, but reviews matter.
That's actress Brie Larson speaking in 2018.
Good reviews out of festivals give small independent films a fighting chance to be bought and seen. Good reviews help films gross money. Good reviews slingshot films into awards contenders. A good review can change your life. It changed mine.
With film critics being nearly all liberal, not only do conservative-themed films have a hard time getting positive reviews, they have a hard time getting reviewed at all. Again, Christian Toto.
Go look at either What is a Woman or Lady Ballers.
Both films produced by the Daily Wire.
You might get maybe 8-9 reviews.
And of course, Christian is right. The small 2017 indie film Lady Bird has received 400 film critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. By contrast, Dinesh D'Souza's 2016 Obama's America was the highest-grossing documentary movie of 2012. It received a paltry 34 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think the Daily Wire PR team reached out to a critic, and the critic went on Twitter and said, "I'm not going to review this movie."
If you don't have an avenue to promote your film, then it'll likely never get made. That's how Rotten Tomatoes and Hollywood blocks anti-woke, pro-American movies from ever getting made. But let's be honest, conservative media carry some, if not most of the blame of this rigged system. One of the biggest complaints we've received over the years from filmmakers is that when they make a movie, they can't get conservative media to cover it. Very few right-leaning outlets have someone dedicated to covering culture. We know that firsthand here at Red Pilled America.
There still is a reticence across the cultural landscape on the right to share works, and that's a real issue. And also, there's a lot of competition. So if outlet A gets into the movie business all of a sudden, outlets B, C, and D may not give them much coverage, if at all, because they are a competitor, and that's a problem as well.
Famed journalist Andrew Breitbart understood how to break the left's monopoly of Hollywood. In 2009, he launched a website called Big Hollywood. At the time, he was asked why he launched the site.
The conservative movement proper did not embrace Ronald Reagan initially, but it eventually came to accept him as the standard bearer of conservatism. He was successful less because he carried conservative principles, but because he came from Hollywood and he understood the importance of communication and pop culture. It took them a long time to realize that that magic was a good way to sell conservatism, that bright-eyed optimism. And so the conservative movement needs to go focus on Hollywood in countless ways. It needs to encourage its young to go out to Hollywood to become screenwriters, actors, producers, below-the-line workers. It also needs to focus on Hollywood proper, film reviews, and become engaged in the debate out there. It's interesting that we have so many people in the conservative movement who write about legislation and political controversies every single day. A matter of fact, there seems to be about 50 people writing on the same subject all day long, but very few people focus on pop culture, and pop culture is the DNA of who we are, and we export that through the satellite dishes and in our DVDs and on the television screen and in films across the world. And if we don't alter that DNA, if we don't try to inject in it our best qualities and not our worst qualities, our fate is in the hands of people who don't agree with us. And that fate is in people in Hollywood that we disagree with right now. So we have to take them on using their skills.
Which leads us back to the question, how do we break the woke monopoly of Hollywood? The answer is clear. We need to build the same structure that the left has used to make Tinseltown its own little monopoly. Yes, we need to foster screenwriters and actors and editors and musicians. But we also need to create an ecosystem of amplifiers that promote their work. We need film reviewers and music reviewers and award shows that promote and celebrate excellence in the arts. When Brie Larson was speaking out about the importance of film reviews in making and selling movies, she wasn't advocating for an environment that would propel conservative films. She was actually arguing to make Hollywood more woke by hiring more woke critics.
I do not need a 40-year-old white dude to tell me what didn't work for him about A Wrinkle in Time. It wasn't made for him. I want to know what that film meant to women of color, to biracial women, to teen women of color, to teens that are biracial.
Brie Larson and the film industry at large understand the power of storytelling, and they are doing everything possible to keep it their monopoly. We must, you must, get engaged with pop culture. Because if we don't, if we allow the woke mob to continue their monopoly on the institution that defines what it means to be American, then we deserve whatever they have in store for this country.
The new documentary entitled God and Country, which looks at the history of Christian nationalism in America and how Donald Trump and members of the far right have twisted Christianity. Joining us now, one of the film's producers, Emmy Award-winning actor and renowned filmmaker Rob Reiner.
Red Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's owned and produced by Patrick Harelci and me, Adriana Cortez, for Informed Ventures. Now you can get ad-free access to our entire catalog of episodes by becoming a Backstage subscriber. To subscribe, just visit redpilledamerica.com and click Join in the top menu. That's redpilledamerica.com and click Join in the top menu. Thanks for listening.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.